The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good afternoon and welcome. Welcome on back to our itsy bitsy teensy weensy Saturday evening show. And I'm Randy Corcoran, your pumped up purveyor of principled, passionate patriotism, unafraid to sit in the chair and push back anytime, anywhere, with anybody on all of the nonsense that's going on. Was listening to our top of the hour news, and apparently, thank you, sir, apparently the debt ceiling is now the hot piece of propaganda where they're trying to spin Republicans as the bad guys, trying to cut government spending by 13%. Oh, my gosh. Imagine that. And I will be the first one to admit I have not dug into those numbers, but I am betting, I am guessing that what they're talking about is cutting the increased growth, the planned, built-in, continual, nonstop, never-ending growth of government by a mere 13%. And they're also trying to stoke up the fear, like this happens every single time, by telling you that government services are going to stop. You're not going to get your Medicare, your Social Security payments. All nonsense. Those expenses are on autopilot. They get paid. The government brings in revenue every single day. The idea of a grand default here at, what are they saying, mid-June? I forget the date now as well, but it just doesn't work that way. It's just another PSYOP, just another PSYOP. And give me mic two, if you would, please, Blake. The current putative commander-in-chief, he who showers with daughter. And man, oh man, I just got on a thread on Twitter earlier today and clicked on it, and it was picture after picture after picture after picture of the so-called president of the United States, Joe Biden, with his hands all over young children. And even a pretty provocative picture of him with his own granddaughter. It just, there is something, you know, creepy, sleepy. Sleepy's not even, doesn't even fit anymore. The sleepy and non-functioning Joe Biden is really what we are seeing unfold before our very eyes. But here's what, just as a quick reminder, this is not a topic for the show tonight, but when I heard all this, I just had to let you hear it as well. This is the current putative president of the United States. Let me get some volume here. And this is what he had to say about the debt ceiling back in 2011.
How can you explain this? How can you explain the fact that grown men and women are unwilling to budge up till now, and still some of them are still unwilling to budge, by taking an absolute position, my way or no way? That's not governing. That's no way to govern. You can't govern that way. This is a cycle. I predict to you that a lot of those new members who came here with my way or the highway, they'll either be on the highway or they'll learn that they have to have compromise. How can you explain this? How can you explain the fact that grown...
Yeah, those do play over and over and over if you're not watching them and you're not careful, I see. All right, they moved the monitors in here again. And I love the setup. There's five of them now, but I don't see how to get to my button bar just yet, Blake. So I'm going to ask you, if you would, since we're walking down memory lane with the putative president, to punch up number seven for me real quick. I don't see number I don't see number seven. Okay, well, that's all right. We've got a very special guest coming on the show tonight. Her name is Barbara from Harlem. And that's, I don't remember her real name. I'm sure that she has a full name. I doubt that her birth certificate says Barbara from Harlem. But the book that she, oh, now, even her book, I'm pulling up that cover now. Oh, there she is standing with Scott Pressler. Barbara, yeah, even the book. her moniker on the book is Escaping the Racism of Low Expectations. And if you were with us last week, pretty sure I mentioned her, because just a couple of days before on a prayer call, I'd come on my heart to talk about my wife and her brain surgeries that are starting on Tuesday this week. And we had this special guest speaker on the prayer call, the Republican National Committee prayer call that we do every week, volunteer for anybody who wants to join, Barbara from Harlem. And driving and in the rain, and it came on my heart. And so I mentioned, please pray for my wife and everything that she's about to go through. And Barbara gave this powerful, bone-shivering, spine-tingling prayer, and then launched into her own story about going through the exact same thing that that my wife is going to be facing next week. And so, that was just for me, kind of a God moment that I don't usually speak up in those things unless I'm a speaker, that I would bring it up. And then this wonderful speaker with this so similar experience would be there to comfort and to pray. So I called her and I talked to her, and I haven't gotten the book yet, haven't had a chance to see it, but her story is so very compelling. And I just think that you'll really enjoy hearing from her. And that should happen around 6 o'clock this evening on Wake Up with Randy Corporan. I was also, while I was messing around on social media, stumbled across a page where the mayor, what is he, three-term mayor, I think, of Denver, Michael Hancock, was complaining about the fact that illegal aliens are being bused from Texas by Governor Abbott up to Denver, Colorado. And it just reminded me, I remember how I never dreamt it would get like this. I never dreamt that we would literally, putatively elect a commander-in-chief who would surround himself with people that would leave the borders of this nation wide open and literally overrun. But I did remember back in 2018 when Mayor Hancock hung up this massive banner on the front of our beautiful city and county building. And it was blue with a big red heart, and it said Denver Heart Immigrants. And massive. I mean, it literally went across four of those massive columns in front of the city and county building. And so an open invitation, a literal open invitation. And, you know, he was highly acclaimed for it. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock, I think this was maybe from Fox 31 or someplace, posted photo of a banner on the city and county and sending love and a clear message to immigrants. This is a quote of Hancock. Sending love and a clear message to immigrants that Denver is an open and welcoming city. And he should have thrown in sanctuary as well. And just found the timeline here, February 15th, 2018. We are now 5 years and 3 months later. And the overflow from the southern border is being shipped off to welcoming, loving sanctuary cities like Denver, Colorado. And Hancock is having a tizzy. Hancock is having a tizzy about this. He said that the shipping of these immigrants, the busing of these immigrants up to Denver by Texas Governor Greg Abbott is buffoonery. Buffoonery. And so I went and I found a picture of that. The front of our city and county building. You know, I say our beautiful, I love that building. When I was a little kid, I can remember back 5, 6 years old even, how exciting it was. And we lived 10 minutes away. I lived right by Washington Park as a little boy. And to know that we were going to go see the lights at Christmas on the city and county building, and drive by if it was really cold, get out and walk around if it was sort of a typical moderate Christmas period. And so, you know, all of those memories. And this is why I love Denver, what Denver used to be, what Denver could be again. And it's why now, you know, when I do a temperature check, 68 in Aurora right now, 70 degrees over there in purgatory. That's my assessment of Denver, Colorado, under the leadership of this mayor. And so he's just crowing and crying about migrants coming. More migrants landing in Denver. But this time they were sent by Texas Governor Greg Abbott. And Hancock refers to it as buffoonery. Buffoonery. Where's your banner, Mayor Hancock? Where's that folded up nicely for the next time you want to show yourself as such a kind, caring, compassionate human being? When you want a virtue signal to all of your fellow Democrats, where's the banner? Rather than complaining that people are being sent to your welcoming, loving Denver Hearts immigrants city, why aren't you welcoming them? And by the way, I always ask this of people who believe that, you know, anybody who needs, feels the need to come into America should just be allowed to come because, you know, people need a place to go. How many do you have at your house? How many are you putting up in your spare bedrooms, in your basement storage area? Maybe setting up some nice tents or those little mini houses or in your backyard and around your property. Hancock, he who posted this massive banner, had the audacity to say that the governor of Texas trying to do something. Have you seen the pictures of what it's like in El Paso and other border towns? And that is moving its way up deep into Texas and Arizona and elsewhere. And Hancock says our resources are not infinite, and so we do need support from nonprofit partners in the city. We got to have it. That was just like 41 people that arrived that triggered this response from Hancock. Hancock, he of the, do you remember the painting? I used to MC the pro-police rallies down at Civic Center Park year after year after year. And the last year that I was there, they'd closed off Bannock right in front of the Civic Center, the city and county building. So you couldn't drive through there anymore. They painted, I think it was Black Lives Matter, all across the street there. Just beautiful, bright, bright, pretty colors with their political nonsense. And Hancock says that Governor Abbott has decided he wants to chase cameras. The hypocrisy of these Democrats to implement these policies, but not in my backyard. You remember when Governor Ron DeSantis, who is expected to announce for president next Tuesday, I think, maybe Thursday, but sometime next week, shipped him up to the hangout of the rich and powerful, the beautiful islands on the East Coast. And folks just freaked out. Not in my backyard. Why, we don't have the resources for this. But Texas does. But El Paso, Texas is supposed to deal with this. Governor Abbott said late last week that Texas would continue busing migrants to self-declared sanctuary cities like Denver to provide relief for small border towns. And Hancock's response, it's nothing more than political theater. Buffoonery is what it is. And it's really a very insensitive, disingenuous act from someone who claims to be a servant of the people, and he really isn't. Man, talk about the pot calling the kettle black. By the way, I know Mayor Hancock is black. That's not a racist comment. Look it up. Not sure what the final numbers are today, but we were probably around 10,000, maybe 10,100 migrants since December, according to a representative of the city. Denver has spent about $17 million on aid, while only receiving $900,000 from Washington. So Hancock puts up the big banner, Denver Heart Immigrants. We are a sanctuary city, and we're proud of it. And so when towns and border areas and states that are overflowing, over capacity, can't possibly deal with the numbers, start saying, okay, here you go. That's buffoonery. Unbelievable. So they get temporary help and are then meant to move on to a permanent situation. Like what? Like seeking asylum, which I think those hearings are being set out about 4 years. So what is Denver doing? 30 days. We're providing 30 days. It's a good amount of time to give people the opportunity to rest and to start making other plans and get connected to those resources. And also, we need them to kind of move out, cycle through the shelter, so that we are making room for others that are coming. What world do these morons live in? It's just extraordinary. And they're being bused to this, a city that has about the worst air quality in the world. You been outside today? Man, it was such a beautiful, could have been such a beautiful morning. I was up early. We're, you know, getting the house ready for when Tana comes back from surgery and her beloved cat back in the animal emergency. So I got on the Harley and rode over there to see him and ran some errands and went by to see my old friend Bill Vickery, who was having an open house today doing the electric bicycle test rides. And they're really, really cool. And there was a sales guy there who's been there forever. And it was just like old home week walking in. I walked in the front door. Kelly Michaels and Peter Boyles were right there. They were doing a live remote right inside the front door. So it was just very interesting. But I just got to thinking about how much things have changed. The first time I purchased a motorcycle from Vickery, I believe, Bill and I were reminiscing about this quickly this morning, was back in 1982, 41 years ago. I bought my very first new motorcycle, the Yamaha 1100, and I bought soft luggage. It was my first touring bike, even though it wasn't a full-fledged, you know, like a Goldwing type bike. And then 2 years later, I stumbled across a real deal on an actual Yamaha touring bike that was owned by Doug Spedding, the inheritor of Spedding Chevrolet. You longtime Denver folks, you know, Boulder Turnpike and I-25, Spedding Chevrolet. One of the Spedding kids. I bought his motorcycle with 1,000 miles. It was a beautiful, chromed up, luxurious Venture Royale, which I drove for 20 years and is still owned by a good friend of mine. And I thought, man, the Denver that we lived in back then. And how fast do the years go? 41 years since I bought my first new motorcycle. I just can't believe the change and the passage of time. All of you with kids and grandkids and watching the time click away, man. Wrap your arms around the people that you love. Enjoy those moments. But don't spend too much time outside breathing, because these Canadian wildfires, and there's, again, this is happening a lot, suspicion of arson. These forests are not being tended to at all. They're not thinning out. They're not being taken care of. They're being just, it's kind of a hands-off thing. And you have to wonder if the global alarmists and the man-made climate change shouting in theater fire folks are behind some of this to just continue to make it worse and worse and worse. Hard to say, but we're bad. And if you look at there's some scale out there, some rating, and Denver has been in the top two or three of the worst cities air quality in the world today. Today. So be careful when you're out there. And Mayor Hancock, thanks one whole heck of a lot for your beautiful, self-aggrandizing, virtue-signaling Denver Hearts Migrants banner across our beautiful city and county building 5 years ago. I am so glad that you now have to prove it, back it up. No more feel-good politics. The reality of Democrat policies are front and center. I know we're going long. I know we've got calls. So let's get to our break right now if we can, Blake. I'm Randy Corporan. You're listening to 710 KNUS. It hadn't been that long for me, man. I was on a Harley most of the morning. A lot of rock and roll goes on. So good to have you here. I've got some audio from the FBI whistleblower hearings this week that I'm going to share with you in a little bit. But let's go ahead and get our phone call started for the evening on the show with Mark in Denver. Mark, welcome back.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I see a lot of similarities between the immigrants and the book, The Grapes of Wrath.
Illegal. I prefer the term illegal aliens, but go ahead.
Well, I can go with that.
Yeah.
But I mean, somehow they get the word, and in the book, these people in Oklahoma got the word there was jobs in California, and when they got there, there was nothing. And the immigrants are going to find the same thing here too. They're going to find pretty much nothing. And you know, we have some of the other same things. We got the Hooverville style encampments and it's just a bigger,
no, Mark,
much
this is
dirtier scale.
Yeah, this is a tremendous analogy that you're making and comparison, because even riding, or actually I drove in because it's supposed to rain, but driving into the studio tonight, those homeless encampments, even when they come and clean them up, the piles and stacks of trash seem to remain for days, and they blow around and they just make everything look, you know, I don't know why the words low class pop to mind, because that's not really what I mean, but just poor, uncared for, unloved, uncared about, just terrible. And it's, we don't have like 100% employment in America right now. We've got limited jobs for, you know, labor-oriented jobs. The natural inclination for some people is going to be to hire cheaper labor. A lot of it will be paid under the table. A taxing on our school systems, on our hospital systems, on our welfare systems. How are we going to pay for all this? How are we going to fix it, Mark?
Well, it's impossible to pay for it, and fixing it, I've got no idea. I got no clue how to make this better. And not only that, these people have never worked before. They don't know what a job is. They've spent 3 months walking across Mexico, according to news reports. The women have been being raped the whole time, And how does that lead to them having any kind of marketable skill here in Denver, Colorado, or wherever?
Yeah, and it's not just the women. It's the children. It's the children. The fentanyl's coming with them. The terrorists are coming with them. The Chinese nationals are coming with them. What good can come from all of that? But how old were you when you read The Grapes of Wrath?
It was probably high school. I was probably 16 or 17. And I've read it again a couple of times since. I've read very few books in my lifetime. So I'm, no super educated reader. But
I think for me as well, I think it was high school. I do. And, you know, back when high school actually gave you access to tremendous authors, tremendous stories, rather than trying to, you know, brainwash you with political correctness and gender ideology and all of the other nonsense we're doing, cramming down our kids' throats right now. But books like that leave a lasting impression. And it really was such a tremendous exploration of the struggle, you know, the father who's trying to find a way to feed his family and they get stuck in the Oklahoma Dust Bowl, the middle of the Great Depression. I don't think we're headed that. I think we're headed that direction. I don't think we arrive at that place, because I just don't think people are going to put up with it with the upcoming election in 2024.
Well, how do you turn the? There's still 2, maybe 3 million of them here, present, and can we send them back? I'd like to think we could.
Well, I know Donald Trump is the only person I've heard talk about that specific issue, and he has said it directly that, yeah, we're going to find them, people who are here illegally, people who invaded our borders, people who don't have, you know, skipped out on their court hearing. I mean, we're never going to, we'll never scoop them all up. And I hate to talk to them like they're, you know, a pesty garden varmint or something.
Exactly.
Because
hate,
they're
hate the sin, not the sinner, you know?
Yeah. But we have to rebuild our country first. Have you driven around the Denver area lately? The roads are horrible. Just everything is in decay. Stefan's title of Denver in Decay is so perfectly correct.
Well, it's the whole state, but yeah, I'm 54 years old. I'm a graduate of Columbine High School, and it's so different. I try and tell my wife how it was, that you wouldn't even see trash alongside the road or in a parking lot. And now it's just everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah, I mean, there are gated communities. There are a few neighborhoods where you still feel safe, where you drive in. And gosh, this is nice. And, you know, this isn't like some elitist view. I grew up in an 800 square foot house, you know, with a basement to play in. As a kid growing up in Denver by Washington Park, but man, there's just a feeling that used to exist most places where you'd go in America that doesn't exist anymore. And it's Democrats, it's Democrat policies when they get in power. And now it's all on display for everybody to see. And listen, I'm not letting Republicans off the hook who go along with this crap. The moderates who just want to compromise and move to the left a little bit more slowly. We're all responsible for letting this happen. Go ahead.
That's why I see Trump as the only choice. Everybody else is just an imitation of him at best. And who knows if they got the guts and the strength to carry out the tasks and goals he sets. And you know, maybe DeSantis is great, but Trump's the original. And how can you go for something less than that?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I in my promo for the show, I talked about the fact that DeSantis has finally announced. Blake, are you going to text me? Finally announced that he's getting in. The numbers are so bad right now for him, down 40%+ to Trump. Everybody else is in the single digits. Does he have a chance? You know, he's got a wonderful track record in Florida. He's got this very calm, matter-of-fact demeanor and way of presenting himself. Does he have a chance of closing the gap with Donald Trump?
Well, maybe he does, but politicians always wash out, and that's what he is. He's a politician. Donald Trump's our first citizen president, and that's so significant to me. He's one of us. I know he's a billionaire, but he feels like one of us still to me.
Well, it's very interesting, isn't it, Mark, to if you go back and watch, you know, an interview that Trump may have done with Oprah Winfrey or when he was talking about like 20 or 30 years ago, sending our manufacturing overseas, sending our young men and women overseas to fight foreign wars and things like that. In those regards, in those respects, he has not changed at all. And I think that's why he still has such power and attraction for so many just America first citizens.
Yeah. Well, I better go off here. Let somebody else get on.
Yeah, we do have full lines, Mark, but it was a great way to start the conversation. And I really do appreciate it. You have yourself a good night.
It was great talking to you.
Yeah, you too, Mark. All right. Let's see. Let's get up to Jack in Evergreen is next. Jack, welcome. Jack, are you there?
Do you hear me?
Yes, sir. We got you.
Yeah, I'm in Evergreen. The phones don't work here either. You asked the question, how are we going to pay for all these expenses with all these busloads of illegals? You know, the answer to that is obvious. I mean, all we really have to do is every time a Democrat tells a lie, fine them $5. That'll cover all of it.
But, unfortunately, we could say that about a bunch of Republicans as well.
But, you know, I heard you quite a while back mentioning about how you were just you couldn't understand why a lot of people couldn't conceptualize who Donald Trump really was. They couldn't understand who he was and what he was. And if you'll remember correctly, and I don't know if you've got a station archivist or not as on all these podcasts, but that first week when you went on Saturday and filled in for Craig Silverman, and him and his family were vacationing, I think, in Mexico, and that was and he had you sit in for him. And I called you up. It's the first time we ever talked. And I was just livid that you couldn't understand who Donald Trump was. And now I'm hearing you saying the same thing. I think it's kind of comical.
Well, I'll tell you, I was elected to be a Ted Cruz delegate back in 2016. So obviously you fight that fight. That's what you're hired to do when you get elected to do something. But I believe Donald Trump was a Democrat, a pro-abortion Democrat, you know, money-making, billionaire, selfish, bought into all the nonsense. And you know probably, Jack, you probably heard me tell the story that it was with a 10-hour delay flying home from the Republican presidential convention and a big delay at the airport that I stumbled across someone whom I know very, very well and trust her honesty, who's been a lifelong Democrat, television producer, and I sat down with her because we both had delays, and we talked, and I said, well, who are you going to vote for? She said, I can't vote for Hillary because I think she's a criminal. I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump because I don't agree with him, but I hate what the media is doing to him. They're lying about him, and I'm paraphrasing. And the way she knew that is she's flown with him on his plane. She's been to Russia with him on his plane. She's been to his weddings, you know, covering them. She's been up in Trump Tower, and she said he treats women with respect. He puts them in positions of power. What a contrary narrative to the E. Jean Carroll nonsense that we got blasted with for 2 weeks.
He was chiding the Chinese for stealing technology 30 years ago.
I mean,
the guy is so far. I mean, anyway. Is there any way I could pull that podcast up? It's got to go back. What? How long have you
I
been
think,
on it?
I think they're all there, man. I think so. Yeah.
I wouldn't know how to get to it, but I was pretty hot about it. I mean, like I said, I didn't know you at that point. I got pretty snotty with you.
I had to fend off an awful lot of Trump supporters, and I had to convince them that my transition was an honest one. And then the guy got in office, and we saw that you guys were all right all along.
Well, you know, I understood who Trump was probably because I'm a New Yorker. I understand New Yorkers. I mean, the New Yorkers of my era, not the ones we have today.
Sure.
All righty.
God bless, Jack. Thank you.
Right. Bye.
Jack's line is open, 303-696-1971, 696-1971. Let's get to our break. When we come back, we'll finish up these phone calls, and I've got to at least get started on this FBI audio because it is powerful. Powerful stuff. The FBI whistleblower hearings occurred right in line with the Durham report, all 306 pages sitting here right in front of me, still working my way through this disastrous. And I say disastrous not because the FBI is so corrupted at the top, but because Durham failed to hold anybody accountable. He just tells the story and he never seals the deal. But we'll talk about that and anything else that's on your mind tonight. Don't forget Barbara from Harlem. Her book, Escaping the Racism of Low Expectations, will join us a little bit after 6 o'clock. So you stay right there here on 710 KNUS. Ozzy. Yeah, I'm in a rock and roll mood for sure. I had my first nap today. I don't know if that's because 64 is in my sights now. And it's not like I've never napped before. You know, when I used to do regular morning radio, getting up at 4 o'clock, usually I'd have to work through the end of the day, but I could fall asleep in my chair pretty easily. But literally, and it's what a week. We started Monday morning filling in for George Brockler, which was an awful lot of fun. Thanks to Blake for coming in because Billy couldn't make it. And but we had a great show. And then I had to go right straight to the law firm, get to work, because big hearing this week. And it was the hearing that would never end. Day two of a 2-hour hearing that again went on for hours and hours. And so, man, by the time I got done running around this morning and had biker's brunch at Piper Inn right next door to Vickery after driving in, and got home, did some stuff with the wife, and sat in the chair and just overwhelmed with sleepy feelings. And I usually just fight through them. I get up, splash some water, get back to something else to do. And I just gave into it. And I really feel great tonight. So I don't know. Maybe I'm in that transitional period where I'm going to start needing my afternoon nappy. But I feel good. Before we get back to the phones, a couple of things I need to remind you about. The Western Conservative Summit. Man, it's coming up fast. June 9th and 10th at the Colorado Convention Center. And so many of your favorites. Lauren Boebert, we all know she's now in the middle of a divorce. I'm really sorry to hear that. I've known her for a while before her congressional career. And she's just has maintained, been the same person throughout. And I just admire that. Citizen legislators, not people who become chameleons and people who will say whatever they think they need to say to get reelected. And nobody's perfect. You know, I'm not putting her on this super high pedestal, but can you think of anybody who's made a bigger splash for conservatism since getting elected than her? Eric Metaxas, Ken Buck, Jenna Ellis, Frank Gaffney, Tulsi Gabbard, and just added Missouri Senator Josh Hawley. And of course, News Talk 710 KNUS is the official station of the 2023 Western Conservative Summit. You can get your tickets online at 710knus.com, 710knus.com. And I was invited to introduce somebody. I'm supposed to pick who I want to introduce, and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do it. But I will see. We'll see what the scheduling looks like and see if we can make that happen. Alan in Lakewood standing by. Before we talk to him, though, I want to at least get a little start, a itsy-bitsy start on this FBI whistleblower stuff that's going on. And this is not related to the weaponization. Well, you know what? It really is, now that I think about it. Yeah, this is the worst kind of weaponization when you think about it, because this person, Marcus Allen, the clip you're going to hear is actually from a deposition testimony, videotaped deposition testimony that he gave prior to the hearing. And then you'll hear a brief couple of words from Matt Gaetz, who was actually the questioner when FBI whistleblower Marcus Allen was on. But this is about January 6th. It's very, very important. Then we'll get back to the phones.
How can you explain this? How can you explain the fact that grown men and women...
Whoa.
Are unwilling
well, that's
to
not
budge
it.
Up till now.
Maybe I can pull it up over here, because I really do want you to hear this. Here we go. Start it over. All this new technology, you know, it's just crazy.
Those individuals were inside the Capitol, to which the... us, why can't you just send us give us access to the 11,000 hours of video that's available? Because there may be UC's undercover officers or CHS's confidential human sources on those videos whose identity we need to protect.
So Mr. Allen, you got retaliated against.
Those individuals were inside the Capitol.
So I'm just going to try and fast forward this a little bit to let you hear that last piece again. This is FBI whistleblower Marcus Allen testifying about the weaponization of the FBI. And can you make out what he says here?
UC's undercover officers or CHS's confidential human sources on those videos whose identity we need to protect.
So, Mr. Allen, you got retaliated against.
So, oh, stop now. Over 11,000 hours of J6, January 6th, blown up, lied about, insurrection, according to the lamestream, corrupt, coordinated, Democrat-controlled lamestream, mainstream media, cannot be released because if it were to be released, it would expose undercover agents. And, you know, I don't think it's a stretch to say undercover agents committing crimes inside of the Capitol. Undercover agents inside working up the crowd, adding to the chaos. Ray Epps, man. The cover-up for Ray Epps continues.
the one man that we've got clear, unequivocal video of shouting at people. We go over to the Capitol tomorrow. We go into the Capitol. And then at the Capitol, going up and encouraging someone as they're going through barricades, complete protection, was on the FBI's most wanted list for about 60 seconds until all of a sudden it became necessary to cover it up. Will House committee hearings be enough to help people understand just how bad it is? The Durham report lays it bare. These hearings lay it bare. And I've got more audio that we'll get into after we talk to our 6 o'clock guest, Barbara from Harlem. But we promised to get back to the phones before we ran out of time. Alan in Lakewood, welcome to the show.
Hello, Randy. Blessings to you and Tana. And it looks like I need to send some also to Lauren. That's a real shame.
That is a shame.
Sir, do you remember the Cloward-Piven strategy?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I used to talk about it a lot on my morning show. I did a lot of philosophy back in those days. Go ahead and explain it to people who haven't heard it before.
Columbia University, I believe it's a husband and wife team, was that put together the strategy that Acorn was one arm of, and that is to expand the welfare state legislatively to cover as many people as possible, and in street activism, inner city, and so on, to sign up everybody possible for all of the bits and pieces and broad-ranging, overlapping welfare programs possible. The goal of it is to bankrupt the government and to have the people rioting in the streets when they are no longer able to sustain themselves and feed themselves because of the government collapse, and that would lead to the, call it a Bolshevik Marxist revolution to bring down the Constitution in the United States. And it was my recollection that Obama taught that as a course sometime while he was at Columbia. But I've been seeing it in action by people who don't even know that that's what they're doing in Colorado and elsewhere. And this mess with the enormous number of people coming across the border and filling up our cities beyond our capacity in any way to take care of them looks like a piece right straight out of Cloward-Piven.
Yeah, Cloward-Piven was 1966. Richard Cloward and Francis Fox Piven. And I was just looking up while you were talking about it, this quote that I remembered. This is from their strategy. The ultimate objective of this strategy, to wipe out poverty by establishing a guaranteed annual income, will be questioned by some because the ideal of individual social and economic mobility has deep roots. Even activists seem reluctant to call for national programs to eliminate poverty by the outright redistribution of income. Where have we heard those words before? And that was, what, 57 years ago? And they're so close to
hearing them all now.
Yeah, they're so close to implementing it. And can we hold it back, Alan? Are we going to fend it off?
Well, I think we have to talk about it again as part of the total Marxist program and plan that is being implemented as we speak.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. There can be no, it's not an accident. It's not, gee, we just need to get our policies right. It's not, gee, the border is a complicated program. It is a concerted strategy to change the face of America forever. Universal income doesn't mean people get to rise up and live better and better lives. It means we bring everybody down as far as we can. And then the people at the top of the food chain who have everything, all their needs met, all the things that they want, decide and control just how well you and I get to live, Alan.
It's so amazing just how this is a revolution that restores, if anything, the Russian monarchy, the British monarchy as a political system that you have the rulers and then the masses. And the rulers get by promising to take care of the masses. It's Hegelian. It's Marxism. It's Bismarck. Bismarck introduced the welfare state to Germany in order to justify the rule of the Kaiser. It just goes on and on and on. The people that want power and are determined to have it want to get back into a position that they rule rather than represent.
Well, Alan, you hit it, and you hit the wall. We got the music behind us, but perfect, bye-bye. Perfect, yeah. And we are living through it. There's no question about it. We're on the precipice, everybody. And the lightweight Republicans who tell you to step down, calm down, compromise, learn to get along, stay away from people who speak real truth and have spit in the face of this globalist power like Donald Trump. Man, you guys need to, well, let's just say it, wake up with Randy Corporan right here on 710 KNUS. When we come back, Barbara from Harlem, you are going to love this woman. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.